Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, July 24th, 2014. And last January, I started a new trend. And sometimes you get a little bit sidetracked because other things are going on. But the point of my discussion back then was to use science to help people. Use science to help you, the listener. And tonight's show I'll be dedicating to that and setting some directions here that will carry us into the future. But first of all, I want to make a few comments. The hole in Russia has been in the news a tremendous amount lately, and James McCanny has his own theory about exactly what happened here. And so let me begin with that. I found it amazingly humorous that the Russian scientist specialist that they sent out to survey the area came back. And of course, there's many, many scientists now that have gone there. But the official word that has come back is global warming. There's a 200-foot hole in the ground out there, 100 feet deep. And the official word is global warming. Now, hello, boys and girls. You know, the insanity just doesn't end. Global warming is the cause, they say. So at any rate, I thought I'd do a little discussion on this. But I have my own concept of what happened. Yeah, but let's first of all examine. If you haven't seen a picture of this, you can go on the internet and see pictures. But it's a hole a couple hundred feet across, and it is mushroomed out at the top. Obviously, some kind of explosive event occurred there. And so it's not a sinkhole. A sinkhole falls in because of lack of support below. A sinkhole simply collapses, so around the edges you see the terrain falling down in. This has the terrain at the edges being blasted up and away, and there's dirt from the canopy of this blown all over the place. They're finding pieces of the grass and the tundra, the dirt blown all over the place. And so obviously some kind of explosion, not just a bubble bursting, so to speak. So one has to look for an explosive event. We're not talking nuclear power here. We're not talking a nuclear explosion. We're not talking about, say, volcanic type of explosive event. We're talking about a minor surface event that was explosive. Now let's examine what's going on in the area. So first of all, let's rule out the global warming ridiculous explanation that somehow global warming caused a hole in the ground. Second of all, I think we could eliminate the alien hypothesis that aliens were using this as target practice for their laser beam. No, this is a natural phenomena. Something natural happened here, although unusual. They, by the way, did find a second hole nearby. So this is something that was going on. And in this vast, remote area of Siberia, one might expect that there would be other ones, but very difficult. It's not like there's regular flights over this area. In fact, it's called the end of the world. It's like nothing happens out here. But they are drilling for gas in this area, which is an indicator of something that's going on. There is natural gas in the area. So let's look for a mild explosive type of event. But what would cause a deposit of something in the ground that would be explosive? Well, let's point the finger directly at the logical conclusion, which would be natural gas. And natural gas tends to form in pockets. It finds areas to accumulate. And that region is known to be a region in which there are underground caverns and deposits, there are water deposits, and some of the surface formations around in the area are known to be the result of underground activity, water activity, etc. So it would not be beyond the realm of possibility. In fact, it's very likely that this cavern existed as an open space in which underground gases could accumulate. And now we know from mining, etc., that there are explosive gases, methane gas, etc., that miners have to deal with all the time, that they have to be very careful, because in any kind of an open space, these gases are going to accumulate. So, in an area where it is already known that there is natural gas and other types of underground gases, methane, etc. Okay, so accumulating in this cavern, which is a natural phenomenon, would be some gas. Well, the question is, how can you ignite this with a natural cause? And very clearly, the cause would be lightning, atmospheric lightning. And so a thunderstorm rolls over the area, lightning hits, and if it hit within a few hundred feet of that cavern, the lightning passing through the ground, coming out of maybe a piece of blade of grass that's sticking down in there, just the slightest little spark would set that off. So the James McCanney hypothesis is that these are natural events. It's a natural phenomenon. Natural gas is accumulating in these caverns, and very rarely, on an extreme rare occasion, lightning hits nearby, igniting that, and boom, kablooey, there it goes. And also, it dried out the permafrost. You can see at the edges of this crater, you can see the scorched regions and burned regions where the explosion went out and charred the dirt, which basically the permafrost is water that's frozen in the initial ground layers. And you could see where it was charred. They showed examples in the pictures of the dirt that was blown off the top of this cavern that was charred. So there was some kind of heat event going on, although they denied this in the press. They showed the pictures of it in the early releases, and this is something I've learned throughout my history of examining any kind of event, whether it's natural or man-made or whatever, is you have to listen to the reports that come out right away, because they're going to remove those and deny those later. I don't care if it was like a good example was the crash of the airplane with Paul Wellstone. They came out initially and they said there were pieces strewn all over this 100 football area field, and the hours later the metal was still burning. Well, clearly this, boys and girls, is from an explosion of like plastic explosives, something so hot that it makes metal burn and keeps it burning for an hour or hours later. So clearly that plane was blown up in the sky as Paul Wellstone came in, and gee, just happens to be he was investigating the human trafficking that's going on in Israel. He was investigating he was the swing vote for the Iraq war, and he was going to vote. He already publicly stated he was going to vote against it. So, gee, Paul, there was somebody that just didn't want you around anymore, and Ted Kennedy just happened to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning, a little airport in Minneapolis. What's Ted Kennedy doing there? Shaking his hand as he gets onto the plane with his entire family, the daughter and the wife, who could have run in his place and won the seat and swung the vote. And what do? They stick some clown in his place that loses the election to a bought and paid for Republican candidate. Yeah, so you have to listen to the news as it first comes out, and that's the case in the Russian hole in the ground in Siberia. They showed the charred ground. They showed the pictures of it, yet they later denied it. So the James McCanney theory of what happened, what's the hole in Russia all about? Underground natural gas deposits in caverns ignited by lightning. Okay, so that's that. Just a quick note, another plane down this morning in the east, in the far east. I forget, it looked like a 727 type of plane. The Malaysia plane, the 777 that was down about a week ago, had CIA written all over it. And immediately the John McCains and the Obamas jumped all over it, pointing at Putin. You know, it's not like they've never done something to start a war before, like sink ships, blow up buildings, kill royalty, whatever it takes to get those wars going. Keeps the money, keeps the power in the hands of the Jewish European bankers who have been running this planet amok for the last 100-plus years. Just a quick notice here, a listener wrote in and mentioned that the European Space Agency had been monitoring with a satellite the magnetic field that seems to be moving a bit more rapidly than normal. And so trying to relate this to the so-called vortex that was causing our weather. Well, of course, there's no such thing as a vortex in weather. That was just a term somebody made up to a buzzword so everybody could say vortex and not understand what was really going on there with all the manipulated weather that we had at that point. But does the magnetic field cause weather? No. No. The magnetic field has been moving for thousands of years. It's been moving up to the North Pole, and the velocity of movement changes every year. Sometimes it moves more, sometimes it moves less. But the fact that our magnetic field North Pole is moving a little faster one another year has absolutely nothing to do with weather, let alone our recent strange weather. Now, a number of weeks ago, and I started talking about Noah and the Ark, etc. And I've, in fact, my 2-CD set, which was produced in quite a few years ago, 18-hour lecture, The Physics of Ancient Celestial Disasters, has a section on Noah, the Great Flood, etc., and the fact that it was 40 days and 40 nights of us moving through a comet tail that happened thousands of years prior to the Moses-Venus event. So at any rate, a listener sent this in, and this is very creative, so I it comes from apparently a blog regarding Noah, but it's a parody, so it's rather humorous. I want you to listen to this. I'm going to read it in its entirety. It says, in the year 2004, the Lord came to Noah, who was now living in the United States, and said, once again, the earth has become wicked and overpopulated, and I see the end of all flesh before me. Build another ark and save two of every living thing, along with a few good humans. He gave Noah the blueprint, saying, you have 6 months to build the ark before I will start the unending rain for 40 days and 40 nights. 6 months later, the Lord looked down and saw Noah weeping in his yard. But no ark, Noah, he roared. I'm about to start the rain. Where's the ark? Forgive me, Lord, begged Noah, but things have changed. I needed a building permit. I've been arguing with the inspector about the need for a sprinkler system. My neighbors claim that I violated the neighborhood zoning laws and building the ark in my yard and exceeding the height limitations. We had to go to the Planning and Zoning Board for a decision. Then the Department of Transportation demanded a bond be posted for the future costs of moving power overpasses and other overhead obstructions to clear the passage for the ark's move to the sea. I argued that the sea would be coming to us and that they would hear nothing of it. Getting the wood was another problem. There's a ban on cutting local trees in the order to save the spotted owl. I tried to convince the environmentalists that I needed the wood to save the owls, but no go. When I started gathering the animals, I got sued by an animal rights group. They insisted that I was confining wild animals against their will. As well, they argued the accommodation was too restrictive and was cruel and inhumane to put so many animals in a confined space. Then the EPA ruled that I couldn't build the ark until they'd conducted an environmental impact study to my proposed flood. I'm still trying to resolve a complaint with the Civil Rights Commission on how many minorities I'm supposed to hire for my building crew. Also, the trade unions say I can't use my sons. They insist that I have to hire only union building experience. To make matters worse, the Customs and Immigration Agency seized all my assets, claiming I'm trying to leave the country illegally with endangered species. So forgive me, Lord, but it would take at least 10 years for me to finish the ark. Suddenly, the skies cleared, the sun began to shine, and a rainbow stretched across the sky. Noah looked up in wonder and asked, "You mean you're not going to destroy the world?" "No," said the Lord, "the government has beaten me to it." Okay. So anyway, I love that. That's a great contribution from a listener. Okay, a couple topics here I will be covering in detail as time goes on. The Rosetta mission to a comet is already there. Let me just give a brief comment. European Space Organization has sent a satellite to orbit and then land on a comet. It's already orbiting since May, first arrival. It's orbiting a comet nucleus, and they show one fuzzy picture. Now, let me think. They've been there since May, obviously taken lots and lots of pictures. They have spectral analysis. They have spectrometers. They have all the instrumentation that you would ever want to examine a comet nucleus, and all they post is one fuzzy, out-of-focus picture. I wonder what they're hiding. Okay, Sliding Spring is heading to Mars. It's a comet that will pass by Mars, and Mars will actually be encompassed in the tail of this. This is coming in early October. So I'll keep an update on that, but I've already given my estimate of the type of things that will happen on a show a couple of weeks ago. I'm not going to repeat that, so go back and listen to prior shows to pick up on those details. But as that approaches, of course, I will be keeping you posted. The Pluto flyby next July, that's going to be very interesting. NASA seems to pick these dates. I remember back in, what year was it? It was July 4th when the Temple 1, the Deep Impact comet probe from NASA was crashing into, they had an impactor crash into the nucleus of Comet Temple 1. And, of course, I had predicted that what they're going to see is a bright flash due to the electrical discharge between the charged comet nucleus and the spacecraft. That happened. As the impactor hit, nothing came out except dust. The imaging showed that 99.9% of the nucleus was a dry, hot rock, and it had absolutely no water at all, let alone water coming off the nucleus. And so that was another set of fudge factors from NASA. They produced some photos taken from Earth, from an Earth-based telescope system, saying that they saw a brightening in the comet. It was actually before the impactor hit, but they associated it with the impactor, and saying that that was caused by the impactor, a brightening, and therefore so many tons of ice were blown up into the air. But the reality is the nose-to-nose photos of the impactor hitting the comet nucleus showed only dust rising up into the region off of the comet nucleus, left a gaping hole, but no water. At that point, the NASA scientists said, "Well, we have to dig deeper." Well, That's what PhD means, piled higher and deeper. At any rate, then, so those are the three issues. When I was on the John Moore show yesterday, a woman called in and asked me about water filtration and if I could make any recommendations. And I thought, gee, you know, that's what my web page is all about, the sales page. Now, let me explain something about water filtration. There are many products on the market today, and I see all the time people making mistakes. What I have on my web page is there for a reason. It's the best products, not only the best products, but they're the best products at the most reasonable pricing. And so the whole idea is I've spent a long time. I used to sell one product. I don't sell anymore. We all know what that is. And there's some problems with that product. And I do, you know, I don't want to go into the you know, details here, but the issue is that what I've got on my sales page is the absolute cutting edge technology of the day. Nobody has the GF filters. These are the new filters that take out pharmaceutical drugs. They take out the fluoride in the iron and the arsenic, the things that the old add-on filter used to take out, but additionally they take out the chloramines. You know, 5 years ago, we didn't have chloramines in the water. Now they're pouring it in by the gallon along with your drinking water, and that's to change the taste, because the taste of the water is so bad that kills a lot of the bad taste. But you're drinking this horrible chemical. It takes that the chloramines out. It takes out the bacteria. It takes out excessive minerals like the sulfur, those type of minerals, the ones that you don't want. So in the single filter element, all of a sudden you have a lot more capacity to remove bad things than you have in any other off-the-shelf water filter element. So that's tremendous, and a lot of people live in the country, they live on a well, they're remote, and they don't have to worry about that because they don't have city water. But at any rate, also I have storage systems in the new mini filters, the 1 and 2 liter personalized travel emergency sports water filtration units. I also provide water storage because I've come to realize it doesn't do you a lot of good to filter water if you don't have something really well contained, sealed, to put that water in. And so also I sell the modular filtration and storage system, big 6.5 gallon tanks. 6.5 gallons is about the most you can carry and move practically. 5 gallons is a bit heavy, but most people can handle 6 gallons, or the 6.5 gallon container. So that's as big as I wanted to go. They have screw top locking caps, easily removed, easily replaced, where you can store your water in. You can buy extra tanks as you need or as you want. And so I built the filtration system right into the tank system using the dome filters, which are high capacity. So you only need 2. And you can filter about 50 gallons a day. If you keep them full, you can be pushing 100 gallons a day through that one system. That's a lot of water that would deal with a pretty significant group of people and for emergency. So I don't want to dwell on this too much, but the water filtration products that I have on my sales page are there for a reason. They're the best designed system on the planet. And like I say, the filters, what I call the GF filters, the new filtration systems, they're in the minis, they're in the bigger filters, and they take out, look at the, I'm not going to repeat all of these online, but in the sales page, I have a line there that says the properties of the filter elements. Click on that and read everything that comes out of the water in those filters. plus I have the pre-filter. If you're in a serious situation where you have really heavy chemicals in your water, many wells are such. A lot of people use that pre-filter every day to remove the gunk from the water before it goes into their water filter. Now, the other thing about water filters is it has to be portable. So if there's an emergency, you can grab that thing. You grab the kids in one arm and you grab your water filter in the other and you run out the door. You pour the water out that's in there, so you're not trying to carry water around, but that thing is portable. There's no hose hookups, there's no electric hookups. It's portable right now in an emergency. It's the one thing that you need in an emergency. It's the first thing. It's the last thing. It's the most important thing. You can go a week without food. You cannot go a week without clean water, believe me. You can't go a day without clean water. Why do I concentrate on that? I used to sell like the freeze-dried food. I don't anymore because you can get it someplace else. I sell those water filter items because my page is the only place on this side of the solar system where you can get this stuff. It's really good. It's well thought out, and it's there for a reason. Don't buy something that has an electric plug or a hose attached to it because it ain't for emergency. It might work okay, but remember that a high pressure hose or an electric pump is not going to allow you to filter radiation. Radiation is attached to dust. Typically, it's very loosely attached to dust or other contaminants. So if you put it through a high-pressure system with a pump, an electric pump, or with a city water line, it's going to rip that radiation atom off of the dust or the pollution, and it's going to go right through your filter. Okay? So don't be fooled by people that are telling you that an inline system or an electric pump system is going to somehow take out radiation, because it's going to go along with the minerals. It's going to be that radiation atom is going to break free, and it's going to go right through your filter. That's why I have the pre-filter in a gravitational system, because it takes that dust out. Besides, you do not want radiation in your primary filter system, because it's going to contaminate. It's going to build up and build up and build up, and now you're going to have a real nice radiation source right in front of your very nose. That's why the pre-filter is so important if you're dealing with radiation. You filter out the dust or the impurities that the radiation is attached to, then you take that out far away and you throw that powder away and you renew it. It gets it out of there. It doesn't allow it to go into your nice clean gravity water filter. These systems are very well planned and thought out. So, if you want to know about water filtration, go to my webpage. I'm not going to dwell on this, but the woman called in, and people are really being fooled by water filtration products today. And I'm not going to talk negatively about any of them. All I'm going to say is positively about what I've got on my sales page is well thought out. It's what you need, and there's nothing else on the planet like that. Nobody else sells a pre-filter. Nobody else sells a modular filtration and storage system, which you should have as a backup. Nobody sells the bigger containers, and nobody sells the GF filters that take out all of the chemicals and all of the bacteria, the pharmaceuticals, etc., that you're going to have in your water supply coming from the city these days. Okay, enough said. Just a brief mention, this past week, 45 years since the alleged first Apollo landing on the moon. And once again, NASA has never provided, in fact, they conveniently lost all the data, all the design data, all the photos, all the lunar landing footage. They lost it all. How convenient. All of the evidence is no longer around. But the point is that NASA has never, since day one, provided real evidence that it went to the moon. End of case. No point in talking about it, but what I found comical is that I found a Mexican newspaper poking fun at the Apollo landings. And so if you look in the United States, you could take a survey and get a percentage, who believes, who doesn't. But in foreign countries, the vast majority of people now today do not believe that NASA went to the moon. So that is the credibility of NASA. Whether they went or not is a scientific question, of which they have not provided any real evidence that can be third-party verified. So forget all the blogs, forget all the yo-yos, the NASA Trekkies that run around defending NASA, forget all of that. Doesn't mean anything. NASA has never stepped up to the plate and provided real scientific evidence that it went to the moon, period. But it's comical to see other countries poking fun at the 45-year anniversary. A quick mention, yesterday reported in the news, two young people were killed by lightning. Now this, please, if you're out and about, the family is out, and you see those thunderclouds starting to roll in, get in the car. A car is a very safe place to, you're not going to get hurt by lightning in your car because you got those big rubber tires down there. It's an insulator. And by the way, there's a new strategy. If you have a home electrical system that's off the grid, it used to be that they wanted you to ground your house system, and that's the old way of doing things. There's a new strategy that says do not ground your home electrical system. The reason is because your pipes, all of your metal pipes in your house, your electrical system, all of your electrical wiring, and anything you've got on the roof, like say an antenna or anything else on the roof that's wired into your house through electronics or whatever, all of that ends up going down to ground. So what you've done is provided a beautiful, nice path that originates in ground. If you do not ground your systems, you can still have them float. And this, here's the danger that under normal circumstances, the negative, which is basically typically the ground, can float. And so you can have your, let's say, the outside part of your toaster charged. And that's a danger. So this is a real quagmire. But when lightning comes around, the best thing to do is simply unplug all of your equipment in your house. Just unplug it all. Remove it from, and so that if you do get hit by lightning, it's not going to take out of you all of your electric equipment, which is a giant mess. Believe me, I've had it done. I had the one place I was living, the lightning hit about three blocks away. It blew apart a big pine tree, gigantic pine tree, just blew it to pieces, came out down through the roots and took out electronics in the houses for three blocks around. It took out about 30% of my electronics equipment. Okay, and so that was many, many years ago. But the point is that, at any rate, back to the idea of lightning on the beach or in a golf course, that there is a statistic, and you may not know this, but the highest cause, the highest number of deaths of young men in America between the ages of like 20 and 35 is due to lightning on a golf course, if you can imagine that. And I don't know the exact statistic or the age group, but it's something like that. So when you see those clouds roll in, and don't stand under a tree. A lot of people will hold an umbrella trying to get out of the rain. That's a lot of times, if it's a carbon or if it's a metal shaft in your umbrella, you're holding up a nice lightning rod and you got it in your hand. Get out of there. Get in a building. Take shelter. get in a car. Don't stand out in open areas, and do not stand under a tree, because what happens is that tree will catch the lightning, and the lightning will come out through the ground. Many times in a field, you will see a bunch of dead cows. When this happens, lightning hits, and the cows are standing under a tree. And so what happens is the lightning, electricity is coming through the ground, comes up 1 foot leg across the heart, and then down through the other leg. And the passage across the heart is what actually kills the animal or the person. So once again, it's summertime, you see lightning coming in, get out of there. Picnic's over, boating's over, don't stay out in a lake in a boat. Lightning is bad, powerful medicine. Believe me, you don't want anything to do with it. So, okay, on to the main science topic. Science and how can you live a decent life today? The first thing is you have to remove yourself from society. Now, you know, this, a lot of people think, oh, that means go live in a cave, whatever. No, you have to live on many different levels today. I do. If need be, on a second's notice, I can go live as a caveman, if that were necessary. But believe me, it's not like I want to do that. But if I had to, I would. And I would take care of the people that are important to me. And I would not have a group of people, a large group of people, some of whom would be a tremendous burden. Sometimes one or two people who really don't have it together can be a gigantic burden on all the rest. In the old days, in the Spartan society, those people were simply banned because there was not enough resources for extra. There just wasn't enough. One of the luxuries we have today is that there's a lot of free time, food's there, drive the kids to the movies, all kinds of sporting events, and so there's a lot of extra today. Back in the Spartan days, there wasn't a lot of extra, so they'd take a baby out after it was born, and they would take it and examine the baby. And if it was not fully up to 100% expectations, over the cliff, bye-bye baby. They didn't have enough resources. They only could support the ones that would be very healthy, that would promote their society. So I'm not saying we should go back to Spartan ways of life, but I'm just saying that today things are different. But if we had to go back to a cave or a very subsistence living style of living, a lot of people wouldn't make it. Believe me, they're going to be complaining, and they're going to be a big, giant pain in the you-know-what. And I've always said you're going to be surprised, because the people that you think least will be the ones to help and dig in and do their job will be the ones that pick up and do it. And the ones that you thought you could count on the most are going to be the biggest complainer whiners on the planet in trying to do other stuff. And you have to be organized. You have to be efficient. And that's why many ancient societies were very streamlined. They had a leader, and when that leader said something, they all moved, because they knew everything they did depended on that. So, first of all, you have to define your lifestyle. And so, what I tell people in making a list of the things that you want to do in your life, now, don't get caught up in this bucket list thing. I don't believe in bucket lists. I don't believe in doing something and then checking it off a list like, oh boy, I did that now. I went on a bike ride. Oh boy, check that off. I did that. No, that isn't life. That's for people who forgot to live, and now they're trying to catch up. That's playing catch up. But you do need lists. You do need to plan out a well-planned out event, series of events for your life. And you have to plan away from the excesses. And this is something that's unfortunately not done in society for you. what's done in society is you got to drive an SUV that's going to guzzle, 17 miles per gallon gasoline, and you're going to work 40 hours a week until you drop over dead, and then we're not going to pay you anything, and we're going to rob your retirement. That's the present plan for you. So, okay, or you pay on a house interest for 30 years, and then after 30 years, you own it, but, you know, the by then the housing market has crashed and you lose all your money. So anyway, you have to plan what is right for you. Get out of credit, get away from house loans, get away from car loans, own what you have, and then start living. Don't get caught up in this idea that, oh, you can use it as a tax write-off. That's the worst plan in the world. Because what does it do? It keeps you in credit. That's what they want. Any trick in the book to keep you on death row as far as credit is concerned. So get out of credit, pay off your credit cards, and then everybody uses credit. You need it to buy airline tickets, you need it to rent a car, you need it to sometimes to whatever, you know. But sure, use credit, but use it wisely and be able to pay that credit off on short notice. That's the other thing. And keep bills. Make sure you have paper records of your bills and live modestly. You know, the poorest people that I know today were the richest people 10 years ago. And you might be wondering, what does this have to do with science? Before you can use science to better your life, you have to have your life in order. And with this in mind, I'm going to take a little bit of an aside note here. In June of this year, June 18th, the keynote speaker at the American Geophysical Union Washington, D.C. Policy Conference was one Sally Jewell. And who is she? Well, she's the Department of the Interior Secretary. So she's on the cabinet member for the Obama administration, and her keynote speech included the following as primary factors: climate change and fiscal constraint. Now, using those two words together tells scientists something. Now, this is the American Geophysical Union, and they are the kind of the unofficial overseeing entity, organization for scientists worldwide, and this covers space science, geology, all branches of the physical sciences. And so when they have a policy down directive from Washington, all scientists' ears perk up, except mine, because I don't live off the government mammary gland like all these other scientists do. But basically, when they say climate change, it's a policy. Climate change is a government policy. And the Obama administration is jumping all over it. Well, one of the things Obama is doing is selling off water rights, offshore water rights, for wind generation. Now, let me tell you something about wind generation. In its current configuration, wind generation will never, ever replace standard forms of energy for electricity. It's considered by the energy industry to be more of a problem than a benefit. When the wind generators start to work, it's like, oh, we have to deal with this now. And so that little trickle of energy that comes in, really, they have to somehow accommodate it because it's coming in, but it's more of a problem than it is a benefit. They have to shut down, they have to adjust some generators, and it's gusty, it's temperamental, and it really doesn't provide energy. So this entire issue of wind generation being a primary aspect of Obama's policy just shows that he's a president who has no clue about what's going on. The big energy companies are running him around like a like a bull in a circle with a ring in his nose, because he's stupid. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know anything about energy or numbers or statistics or what wind really does. So for him to point to wind energy as to sell the offshore rights now to companies that aren't going to do anything just shows how ignorant he is. But when they say climate change and fiscal constraints in the policy meeting, now this is a policy meeting, the American Geophysical Union, and the keynote speaker is a government Department of Interior, what does that tell scientists? That tells scientists that they better say climate change a lot. They better say it a lot. And if they want their portion of the limited fiscal constraint money, they better really say climate change a lot, and they better say that it's going to cause severe weather. That's where they get their money. And so this allows weather manipulation to continue, aerial spraying, chemtrail spraying, manipulation of the atmosphere by Monsanto or any other government agency that's has basically their hands in the back pocket of the politicians feeding them money, so that they can continue doing whatever they want. And the scientists sit around and their only goal is to make sure they get their money, their little piece of the pie. And if they get their little piece of the pie, everybody's happy. That's the message here. So at any rate, I wanted to include that because that's what science, that's what federally funded science is doing for you today. And what does it do? It allows the government to produce taxes, to subsidize businesses so that their buddies get a lot of money, and it allows them to continue with the same energy policies that we have today with no change. So that's what science is doing for you today on a national level. What do I want to do for you in science? Okay, well, let's look at all of these topics. First, I'm going to read my list of topics, and this is not all-inclusive. Social, living, health, housing, economy, energy production and energy usage, outer space for the masses, food, water, scientific education. Let's quick stop at food. How about real food? How about water that is pure, water without all of the chemical additives and pollution? And science education, real science education on all of these fronts, everything I read off, the government is working to keep the public completely stupid and ignorant. And if we keep living under the global warming, global climate change, fiscal constraint to scientists regime, then you're going to continue getting what you already are getting. Monsanto food, chemical-laden water, education for your students that doesn't make any sense at all. Nobody gets to go into outer space, only well-funded giant mega government programs, and even them, those are being cut back. Then you have, remember, the black ops programs for outer space, for science, that are being fed to the world banking community that fund all of that. And all those scientists are compartmentalized. You never see their name, and they are under duress. They are under duress to do their little job and to do their one little thing, and if they don't, they will be eliminated. That's what you get in science today. Energy production and usage. We are in a crash course with resource usage. There is just an unbelievable amount of resource usage today that's absolutely unnecessary. Timber, metal resources, the use of resources, changing chemicals that come out of the ground, especially oil and petroleum extracts, into every form of chemical on the planet. They're now using corn to make all types of chemicals and other grains. And these, in many cases, are extremely harsh chemicals. They go down into the water. table, the pharmaceuticals is an untold disaster. The pharmaceuticals are taken by people and they pass out through the human waste and go into the water system. So all of the pharmaceutical production in the world that's being purchased in the United States and people are taking medications, that goes directly into the water table. So this is one reason I was mentioned it earlier, it may not be obvious, but my new GF filters take out pharmaceuticals. They take out the pharmaceuticals, so they're not in your drinking water. You're not drinking tetracycline. You're not drinking God knows what kind of pharmaceuticals that are in your water that nobody reports on. Those GF filters will take that out. And so, you know, that's one of the tremendous unmentioned pollutants in the country, in the United States especially. So the economy, you know, where I just read China is coming in and untold billions of dollars being spent in the United States simply purchasing a property just to have it. They're not going to live there. They don't plan on living there. They're just buying it up as an investment. This is driving up the price of the United States, and it used to be you had to be a citizen in the United States to buy property. Not anymore. You can come in and blanket, put in a couple billion dollars and buy up housing all across the United States, drives up the prices in the United States so that the people here cannot afford their own housing. That's what Ben Franklin warned against. He said, you let these bankers in your country. Remember that the American Revolution was throwing them out of the country. And those people back then were also scientists. They understood about science. They understood that science was very important. And so, and of course, they don't have the scientific wherewithal that we have today, but they understood that science was important, and understanding the history, especially the history of banking, was extremely important. The American Revolution, the whole purpose was to throw out the European bankers. By 1913, they were back here in mass and creating the financial system that we're burdened with today. Taxation, wars, the unbridled use of resources, not saving anything for tomorrow, the use of the stock market for futures, for derivatives, for everything else where they can extract money that has no value, that's not based on gain and value. It's just simply by moving money, they can make, they take a little piece every time it moves. And so the stock market is no longer something that creates value. It creates immediate profit. So everything has been, scientists are nothing more than prostitutes. They, whatever they are told to say, they will say as long as they get their money. This is the state of the United States. So let's take energy, water. Those are the two biggest items that need a solution. Okay, in terms of energy, I am releasing right now, and the next, you will see it coming out, a product that will literally solve the world energy problem. And you can start using it. The beauty of this is you can start using it right away on the local level, at your house. It's not a Tesla technology. I want to advise you of that. It's not a Tesla technology of extracting energy from the atmosphere. But it's a technology that will allow anybody, any place, to, on any scale, and this would include all the way up to entire cities, replacing nuclear reactors with these devices so that they can power their cities. And it's a whole new scheme for production of energy. I already have the water filtration systems online, and this is something that everybody has to use. Now, the other thing is, understand, we're not going to change the world overnight. But you can, and what one of my goals here in dealing with energy, with water, with food production, etc., is to start so that individuals on their own individual scale can change their life. And eventually, other people will want to follow. And that's good, because the more people that we have, this is called distributed living. Basically, the food that's produced will be local. The water that is filtered, you can't go out and stop all the pharmaceutical companies from producing pharmaceutical products and dumping them into the water through the human race. You can't stop the world energy crisis because it's just has too much money behind it. You can't stop the wars in the world. I mean, these are things that are going to take decades and generations to undo. But what you can do is begin by providing your own energy, providing your own food, providing your own clean water. Make sure that you have good housing and a good place to live, and the rest of the world is going to have to deal with itself. You're not going to be able to solve the world's problem. So what I am doing in with my scientific background and my scientific knowledge of the problems, let's take energy. What is the main source of energy on this planet that's available to everybody? If you think about that, and I'll be talking more about this, and you're going to see this coming out. What is the one source of energy that's available to everybody? Let me switch veins here for a minute. Do you realize that an area the size of your balcony, a small balcony, even on an apartment or something like that, you could grow enough food for your own vegetables on a daily basis? This is something, there's a book out, it's called, I believe it's called Growing Food in Small Spaces. It's something like that. But at any rate, the techniques for growing food in small areas has been developed. Most people live in a city and depend on the grocery store. But when you go in the grocery store, the food is really, let's call it bad. There's really little food value. It may look good, but the problem is we have a food crisis. We have a nutrition crisis in the United States. So, but the thing I want to encourage people to do is simply you have to step out and re-examine, make a list of what you want, the quality of life that you want, the type of life that you need, and then what we have to do is start producing on a small scale energy, start restricting the use of energy. And I do this myself. I have been doing this myself, and that's why I'm starting to release information on how people can live on an individual basis, food, energy, water, and then follows with that the social conditions, education of kids with correct science, with correct history. And this is where the future is, starting one by one, individuals out there. I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.